101.1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today, you will hear reports from Jonathan, along with Dan Novak and John Russell. Later, Jill Robbins answers a question about New Year's greetings. We close with an American story. This week, it is Jack London's The Story of an Eyewitness. But first, here is Dan Novak.
China is using the Winter Olympic Games to strengthen its efforts to improve the environment. But Beijing, where the games will take place, has a lot of smog. As a result, the city is preparing for the worst. Beijing has improved its air quality since the International Olympic Committee awarded the city with the Winter Olympic Games. But the Ministry of Ecology and Environment has said winter smog risks remained severe. A ministry spokesman told reporters recently that plans were in place in the city and nearby province. When the time comes, Beijing and Hebei will be guided to adopt reasonable environmental protection measures in accordance with the law, the spokesman said. He said reports that heavily polluting industries in the area would be closed after January 1st were not true. Critics warned in 2015, when Beijing was awarded the Games, that dangerous smog would threaten the Winter Olympics. The area is surrounded by big industry. Chinese President Xi Jinping then promised to run a Green Games. Hebei Province, which surrounds Beijing, promised to transform and upgrade its industrial economy. Since then, China has planted thousands of hectares of trees around Beijing. Hebei Province has built large wind and solar farms for creating electricity. And the government has moved hundreds of businesses. PM 2.5 is a form of pollution in the air. In 2016, the level of PM 2.5 pollution in the Beijing, Tianjin, Hebei area was 71 micrograms per cubic meter. The level rose to more than 500 micrograms over the winter. That is compared to an average of 40 micrograms from January to September of 2021. The reading in Beijing was 33 micrograms in the first 9 months of the year. That meets China's 35 microgram limit. But it is higher than the level suggested by the World Health Organization of 5 micrograms. Beijing's pollution levels are likely to rise much higher over the winter. China will win many medals at the Winter Olympics, but the smog could plunge the games into difficulties, said the International Fund for China's Environment, a Washington-based group, earlier this year. Officials said during a government-organized trip recently that all 26 Olympic areas in Beijing and Hebei province would be completely powered by renewable energy. More than 700 hydrogen-powered vehicles will also be used. China has said it would make the games carbon neutral for the first time. Environmental group Greenpeace said without more information, it would be hard to know whether the goal of not increasing carbon gases in the atmosphere was met. Water shortages are another concern, especially for the effort to make artificial snow and ice. Organizers said the games would not put additional pressure on local water supplies. Officials said they would use mountain water and rainfall from the summer months. I'm Dan Novak.
flu season has arrived in the United States after taking an unusual year off. Flu hospitalizations are rising, and at least two child deaths have been reported. Last year's flu season was the lowest on record. COVID-19 protection measures, such as school closures, distancing, masks, and canceled travel, likely prevented the spread of influenza. This is setting itself up to be more of a normal flu season, said Lynette Brammer. She studies flu-like illnesses for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The childhood deaths, Brammer said, are unfortunately what we would expect when flu activity picks up. It's a sad reminder of how severe flu can be. During last year's unusually light flu season, only one child died. 2 years ago, 199 children died from flu, and 144 the year before that. In the newest data, the most severe flu activity was in the U.S. capital, Washington, D.C. The number of states with high flu activity rose from 3 to 7. Recent data show high flu activity in New Mexico, Kansas, Indiana, New Jersey, Tennessee, Georgia, and North Dakota. The type of flu virus this year seems to cause the largest amount of severe disease, especially in the elderly and the very young, Brammer said. Last year's break from the flu made it more difficult to plan for this year's flu vaccine. Brammer said it is too early to know whether small changes to the flu virus this year will affect the flu vaccine's effectiveness. We'll have to see what the impact of these little changes will be, she added. Flu vaccine is your best way to protect yourself against flu. Early signs show that fewer people are getting flu shots this year compared to 2020. Brammer said, with hospitals already affected by COVID-19, it is more important than ever to get a flu shot and take other safety measures. Cover your cough. Wash your hands. Stay home if you're sick, she said. If you do get flu, there are antivirals you can talk to your doctor about that can prevent severe illness and help you stay out of the hospital.
Even as the Omicron version of the coronavirus spreads, camel owners from Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar recently traveled to the United Arab Emirates. They brought with them 40,000 of their most beautiful camels for the Adhafra Festival, an event that celebrates desert culture. Camel beauty is decided based on appearances agreed upon generations ago. Only female camels take part because males fight too much, experts said. A 5-man jury decides the winners. One of the organizers, Muhammad Al-Muhari, described what judges were looking for as hundreds of camels were being shown. Necks must be long and thin, cheeks wide and hooves large, he told the Associated Press. Lips must hang down. The camels must walk tall. It's not so different from humans, Al-Muhari said. Some breeders have tried to cheat. They used band injections to grow the camel's lips, soften the face, and increase the size of the camel's back. Festival spokesman Abdelhadi Saleh would not say how many breeders had been banned over measures to change a camel's appearance. All camels have detailed medical examinations before entering a Dhafra festival. Since Emirati investigators began using X-rays and other devices a few years ago, Saleh said the number of cheaters has fallen. We easily catch them, and they realize getting caught, it's not worth the cost to their reputation, he said. A great deal is at stake. A Dhafra festival offers the top 10 winners in each category prizes from $1,300 to $13,600. At the main Saudi contest, the most beautiful get high prices. Camels change hands in deals worth millions of dirhams, a local form of money. But breeders say it is not only about the money. Saleh Al-Minhali is a camel owner from Dubai. It is a kind of our heritage and custom that the Emirati rulers revived, he said. Revive is a term that means to bring back. Gone are the days when camels were important for daily life in the country. However, experts say Emiratis are increasingly searching for meaning in the past. This includes Bedouin traditions that were common before the UAE became a nation 50 years ago. Rima Saban of the Zayed University in Dubai said, "Younger Emiratis who have identity issues are going back to their heritage to find a sense of belonging." Saban added, "The society developed and modernized so fast, it creates a crisis inside." Festivals across the country celebrate the camel's importance. A Dhafra also brings falcon racing, camel dancing, and a camel milking contest. Each category in the 10-day contest is divided into two types of camels. Mahaliyat, the tan breed that comes from the UAE and Oman, and Majahin, the darker breed from Saudi Arabia. For hours, judges studied each camel, writing lists of the animal's body parts for scoring purposes. Breeders shouted to surprise camels so they would look up and show off long necks. As the sun set over the sands, the winning breeders were called to accept their prizes. Camels were crowned with gold and silver-lined cloth. "We've received over 40 prizes in various camel contests this year alone," said Muhammad Saleh bin Migrin Al-Amri, as he held 4 from the day, including 2 golds. After that, he jumped into his vehicle, and the victory parade of vehicles and camels disappeared into the desert. I'm John Russell.
Hello. This week, we answer a question from Maria in Brazil. "I am sending some cards to my American friends. I'd like to know what to write on the cards for the new year." Maria, Brazil. Dear Maria, thank you for writing to us. In many countries, people send messages at the end of the year or the beginning of the year with greetings and good wishes. A popular wish that you will see on a New Year's greeting card is for good health.
"Wishing you a healthy and happy new year."
Another popular wish is for happiness and wealth or prosperity.
"We wish you a prosperous and joyful new year."
Another wish you can write on your cards is for peace and joy for your friends.
"Hoping that your new year is filled with joy and peace."
As the new year starts, we may wish them success in new beginnings.
"Hoping the new year and your new beginnings bring you much success."
And finally, we can tell our friends how much they mean to us as we look forward to another year. Here is one way to do just that.
Looking forward to another year of being friends with you. Thank you for your friendship.
The VOA Learning English team would like to thank readers like you, Maria, for making 2021 a great year for us. We wish you all a wonderful year of learning together in 2022. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
The Western American city of San Francisco, California, suffered a huge earthquake on April 18, 1906. More than 3,000 people are known to have died. The true number of dead will never be known. 250,000 people lost their homes. Just a few hours after the terrible earthquake, a magazine named Collier's sent a telegraph message to the famous American writer, Jack London. They asked Mr. London to go to San Francisco and report about what he saw. He arrived in the city only a few hours after the earthquake. The report he wrote is called The Story of an Eyewitness. Here is Doug Johnson with the story.
Not in history has a modern city been so completely destroyed. San Francisco is gone. Nothing remains of it but memories and a few homes that were near the edge of the city. Its industrial area is gone. Its business area is gone. Its social and living areas are gone. The factories, great stores and newspaper buildings, the hotels, and the huge homes of the very rich are all gone. Within minutes of the earthquake, the fires began. Within an hour, a huge tower of smoke caused by the fires could be seen 100 miles away. And for 3 days and nights, this huge fire moved in the sky, reddening the sun, darkening the day, and filling the land with smoke. There was no opposing the flames. There was no organization. No communication. The earthquake had smashed all the modern inventions of a 20th century city. The streets were broken and filled with pieces of fallen walls. The telephone and telegraph systems were broken, and the great water pipes had burst. All inventions and safety plans of man had been destroyed by 30 seconds of movement by the earth. By Wednesday afternoon, only 12 hours after the earthquake, half the heart of the city was gone. I watched the huge fire. It was very calm. There was no wind, yet from every side, wind was pouring in upon the city. East, west, north, and south, strong winds were blowing upon the dying city. The heated air made a huge wind that pulled air into the fire, rising into the atmosphere. Day and night, the calm continued, and yet, near the flames, the wind was often as strong as a storm.
There was no water to fight the fire. Firefighters decided to use explosives to destroy buildings in its path. They hoped this would create a block to slow or stop the fire. Building after building was destroyed. And still the great fires continued. Jack London told how people tried to save some of their possessions from the fire.
Wednesday night, the whole city crashed and roared into ruin, yet the city was quiet. There were no crowds. There was no shouting and yelling. There was no disorder. I passed Wednesday night in the path of the fire. In all those terrible hours, I saw not one woman who cried, not one man who was excited, not one person who caused trouble. Throughout the night, tens of thousands of homeless ones fled the fire. Some were wrapped in blankets. Others carried bedding and dear household treasures. Many of the poor left their homes with everything they could carry. Many of their loads were extremely heavy. Throughout the night, they dropped items they could no longer hold. They left on the street clothing and treasures they had carried for miles. Many carried large boxes called trunks. They held on to these the longest. It was a hard night, and the hills of San Francisco are steep. And up these hills, mile after mile, were the trunks dragged. Many a strong man broke his heart that night. Before the march of the fire were soldiers. Their job was to keep the people moving away from the fire. The extremely tired people would arise and struggle up the steep hills, pausing from weakness every 5 or 10 feet. Often, after reaching the top of a heartbreaking hill, they would find the fire was moving at them from a different direction. After working hour after hour through the night to save part of their lives, thousands were forced to leave their trunks and flee. At night, I walked down through the very heart of the city. I walked through mile after mile of beautiful buildings. Here was no fire. All was in perfect order. The police patrolled the streets, and yet it was all doomed, all of it. There was no water. The explosives were almost used up, and two huge fires were coming toward this part of the city from different directions. 4 hours later, I walked through this same part of the city. Everything still stood as before, and yet there was a change. A rain of ashes was falling. The police had been withdrawn. There were no firemen, no fire engines, and no men using explosives. I stood at the corner of Kearney and Market Streets in the very heart of San Francisco. Nothing could be done. Nothing could be saved. The surrender was complete. It was impossible to guess where the fire would move next. In the early evening, I passed through Union Square. It was packed with refugees. Thousands of them had gone to bed on the grass. Government tents had been set up, food was being cooked, and the refugees were lining up for free meals. Late that night, I passed Union Square again. Three sides of the square were in flames. The square with mountains of trunks was deserted. The troops refugees and all had retreated. The next morning, I sat in front of a home on San Francisco's famous Nob Hill. With me sat Japanese, Italians, Chinese, and Negroes. All about were the huge homes of the very rich. To the east and south of us were advancing two huge walls of fire. I went inside one house and talked to the owner. He smiled and said the earthquake had destroyed everything he owned. All he had left was his beautiful house. He looked at me and said, "The fire will be here in 15 minutes. Outside the house, the troops were falling back and forcing the refugees ahead of them. From every side came the roaring of flames, the crashing of walls, and the sound of explosives. Day was trying to dawn through the heavy smoke. A sickly light was creeping over the face of things. When the sun broke through the smoke, it was blood red and small. The smoke changed color from red to rose to purple. I walked past the broken dome of the City Hall building. This part of the city was already a waste of smoking ruins. Here and there through the smoke came a few men and women. It was like the meeting of a few survivors the day after the world ended.
The huge fires continued to burn on. Nothing could stop them. Mr. London walked from place to place in the city, watching the huge fires destroy the city. Nothing could be done to halt the firestorm. In the end, the fire went out by itself because there was nothing left to burn. Jack London finishes his story.
All day Thursday and all Thursday night, all day Friday and Friday night, the flames raged on. Friday night saw the huge fires finally conquered, but not before the fires had swept 3/4 of a mile of docks and storehouses on the waterfront. San Francisco at the present time is like the center of a volcano. Around this volcano are tens of thousands of refugees. All the surrounding cities and towns are jammed with the homeless ones. The refugees were carried free by the railroads to any place they wish to go. It is said that more than 100,000 people have left the peninsula on which San Francisco stood. The government has control of the situation, and thanks to the immediate relief given by the whole United States, there is no lack of food. The bankers and businessmen have already begun making the necessary plans to rebuild this once beautiful city of San Francisco.
That's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.